listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. Hosted by high-stakes headhunter, author, and professional speaker, Scott Love.
You're listening to the Rainmaking Podcast, and my name is Scott Love. Thank you for joining me on the show. I'm excited about our episode today because it's one that's very different than what we've had in the past. Let me tell you about our topic and then who our guest is. Our topic for today is women in leadership roles in professional services firms. We've never talked about that, yet that's an important topic. And our guest is my friend Jill Hughes. Now, you may recognize that name because Jill came on the show in the first year that I produced it. She is the co-founder and chief strategy officer for Society 54, which is a consulting and training firm that helps professional services firms, especially law firms, improve their skills in terms of business development. Now, even if you're not in the legal industry, this conversation with Jill will impact you in significant ways. Of course, all of the concepts are malleable to those who are rainmakers in other types of professional services firms. So make sure you pay attention and listen to what she has to say. As always, this show is sponsored by Leopard Solutions, Legal Intelligence Suite of Products, Firmscape, and Leopard BI. Push ahead of the pack with the power of Leopard. And now here's my conversation with my friend, Jill Hughes. Thanks for listening. Hey, this is Scott Love with the Rainmaking Podcast. I've got a repeat guest today. Jill Hughes is joining us, and today we're talking about women in leadership roles in professional services firms. Jill, thanks for joining me again on the podcast.
Scott, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And so I like this topic because I think it is very much a big part of the way I know for a fact law firms are thinking of in terms of putting women in leadership roles. And I think that's a common trend also in professional services firms across the board. So let me ask you this. What are some of the common challenges that you think women are facing in leadership roles?
Yeah, so I think that there's quite a few, but I think predominantly the biggest challenge is that there are a lot of men in leadership who are, you know, sometimes good old boy network where, you know, they're giving advantages to other men that are, you know, coming up the ranks and the women aren't getting the same opportunities. A lot of that is pointed back to black and white of, you know, these are the numbers and this is what the numbers looks like. But unfortunately, because they're not getting those same advantages, it doesn't show up in the numbers. So there's not a lot of allies out there right now for women evolving to those leadership roles. The other thing that I see is when firms are putting women into place, sometimes they're putting them into place for name only and not giving them the autonomy or the authority to actually lead, which is a big problem. It kind of chips away at the whole culture of the law firm when they're doing it for reasons that aren't, you know, authentic to the firm and the message behind why they're actually putting somebody in place. And that's the other large issue that I see as it relates to the challenges.
And so have you worked with clients where that's the case within their organization before, where somebody is being put into a role and there's no real authority behind her?
Yeah, I mean, it happens every day. And it's not just with women. I see this happening with men too. But I think sometimes people are, you know, putting people into place, and leadership is putting people into place because for the wrong reasons. Maybe they're putting them into place because they have a large book of business and they feel mm-hmm. like they need to put them into place to satisfy, you know, the ego that might be driving around that decision. They're not putting the best people into place sometimes in the leadership capacity. So they're not really thinking about why would they be a good leader? What can they add to this? Do they have the management skills to be effective and make an impact in a leadership capacity? So I think that those are some of those challenges that I've seen personally and that we work with firms every day as it relates to, you know, coaching individuals and helping them kind of get to that next level.
And so where do you think most people can make improvements, whether it's a man or even a woman that's in a leadership role? And let's say you're coaching somebody. How do you coach them to become more effective in their leadership skills?
Well, what's really interesting is, I don't know if you've ever read the book, Confidence Code, which is by Claire Shipman. And I can't remember the other person that co-writes it. But it's a really good book. And it goes into the science of men versus women and kind of what happens in the psyche around just the belief system around whether they can do something or not. And what it shows is that for men, you know, if they're going for a job, let's say, they feel like they have to be qualified at 60% of the job to apply for it. Women feel like they have to be competent in 100% of the job to apply for it.
Oh, wow.
So it really goes to the whole psyche around, can I do this? Would I be effective at it? So when I'm coaching people, whether it's a man or a woman, and they're feeling like they're maybe not ready for it, or, you know, they're worried about kind of stepping into that role, it's really about getting them to understand their power and controlling the narrative that they set for themselves and understand what they want from a career trajectory and making sure that they're putting those building blocks in place to kind of get to where they want to be. And that looks different for everybody, but it's really kind of, you know, doing that self-analysis, understanding where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are, where they may, you know, come off as unintentionally disturbing relationships in a way that they hadn't intended to. Just kind of understanding more about themselves. I think that's the first step that we all have to do, you know, just as a reality check of self-evaluation. And then figuring out, you know, where can they apply those strengths, and not just strengths, but areas that they want to improve and they want to focus on, into their career path to kind of really define what where they want to be in 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And then we start building up, how can we get there? And
that's great.
It starts with kind of understanding and controlling their narrative.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm sure that your clients tell you, these are what I think my weak spots are. How can I ameliorate that deficit? So let me ask you this. How do we become aware of where those pitfalls are? Because as you're saying this, I'm thinking about myself, and how do I really know? You know, how do I really know where that weak spot is? What do you recommend for somebody to really see?
That's really interesting. And it's hard for people to understand where their weak spots are, quite frankly. So we do a lot of different things. One of the things that we do is we work with, you know, leadership to kind of get an analysis from them of, you know, the partners that we're working with to understand where they think their strengths and weaknesses are. Then we do another evaluation with those particular people to kind of evaluate, like, are we seeing eye to eye on this? Are they matching up where they think their strengths and weaknesses are? The other thing that we always do for everybody that we do coaching with is a DISC analysis. And there's several different types of analysis out there. I like DISC because it not only shows your strengths, but it also shows where your weaknesses could be and where you may be unintentionally, you know, disturbing relationships, where things that you hadn't thought of before. And you're seeing it in black and white. So it's a behavioral test. You can't game the test. I've taken it several times. I've tried to game it, but I always end up in the same place. And as I read my results, I'm like, yep, that's me. That's
right.
Me.
Right.
You know, so it's good for self-actualization and evaluation. So I like those kind of tests. And there's other ones out there, like there's Gallup's StrengthFinder, which is also very good, but it points out your strengths and not necessarily your weaknesses. Myers-Briggs is also a personality test, but I think DISC is really good because it is, you know, based in science, and, you know, you kind of get both sides of your personality.
Tell me about that. I actually took that several years ago. I found it very insightful, and it did show me where my weak spots were, which I kind of knew. You know, attention to detail, it's just not a big thing. I mean, well, of course, it is at work. It's a very big thing. To those listening on the show, I never dropped the ball on that. But it gave me some insight into where I really need to spend time into really shoring up weak areas. So kind of describe that. What does the DISC mean? How does that?
Yeah, it's a 4-part quadrant of circles. Mm-hmm. And wherever you land on the spectrum is kind of where your personality sits. D is dominance. So it's direct personality. You're very, you know, focused, targeted, results oriented. There's then the I, which is all about influence, very social people, kind of the extroverts that we typically think of. The S's are steady and conscientious, very focused and more of the worker bees. And then we have the C's that are conscientious and they're very focused on accuracy. A lot of the attorneys that we coach fall in the C category. But what's really interesting is that what we find is when we work with law firms for, you know, many years and work with different practice groups, a lot of times we'll find the same type of people that we get over and over. So if they have a lot of C's, we'll end up seeing a lot of C's. So you attract the people that, you know, you feel most comfortable with. And I think that that's really interesting. But what I like about DISC is I'm a D. So I am somebody who's very results oriented. I'm very direct. how this can be applied, especially in a sales capacity, is I know that I am from a business development context, I am very driven on just getting a sale done. Like, and I kind of get, I want to get to that yes or no quickly. If I'm working with somebody who's a C, they're all about the numbers. Like they want to understand, like, how does this actually relate? Like, what is the business case for this? So I have to approach my business development sales in a different way. So it's good to kind of understand where I am, but also ask questions of the person that I'm talking to understand where they are so I can deliver my message in a way that's going to resonate best.
Yeah, that's great.
My business partner is an I. So she is big picture, very social, and we mesh really well because we have different personalities and different strengths that we bring to our partnership. And we have people that are on our team that balance us out, that are on the C and the S as well. So I like looking at it from, you know, a lens of how can we all work together productively and, you know, find those people that help balance us out as teams. And that's good to look at, not just from your internal team, but also your client perspective as well.
That's great. That's great. So let me ask you this about leadership. I know that empathy and listening is a very big part of it. And what's interesting in my life, my wife, who used to be a social worker and was at home, she actually volunteers. She's on the vestry of our Episcopal parish. So she, in her first time, is in a leadership role. And I'm sure you know, people in volunteer modes, you have to use real leadership because they can bail on you at any time. And there's no consequence for quitting the committee, right? And I saw that, I think that she's built a lot of trust in the organization because she listens to people and she has a lot of empathy. How do you think people can bring those skills to the workplace? And do you think women have an advantage over men in that area?
So there's been some studies on this too, from an empathy perspective. Attorneys actually rate very low on empathy scores, like really, really low. I am lower on an empathy score, and that's partly due to my DISC behavioral style. And I know that about myself. So I actually have to practice empathy. When I go into situations, I have to ask more questions. I have to be concerned in a different way. I learned a lot of these skills when I was managing internally at the last place that I worked, where I was managing a team, very hands-on. And, you know, some of them just communicated a little bit differently. They wanted to, you know, have a conversation about what we did on the weekends, where I was like, it's Monday morning, let's get to work.
Let's get to it, right.
I need to like step back and actually get to know my people and understand, you know, what makes them tick, how they're going to be motivated. And that is all part of empathy. I do think women are better at empathy, but I think that it's not a gender thing. I think it really is kind of based on your personality, but it's something that you can train yourself to be more empathetic and be aware of it.
That's great. That's great. So tell me a time where you coached a female executive or female attorney, female leader, somebody that's new in the leadership role. What were some of the challenges she was facing? Would any of those challenges be unique because of her gender? And how do you think she overcame those challenges to become successful in that role?
Yeah, so I think for a lot of women that I coach, one of the things that's a trend that I kind of see is that they are very, number one, they're very shy about bragging about themselves. And, you know, self-promotion is really, really difficult for them to do. So it's hard sometimes to authentically describe, you know, a win that you've had or something that you're involved in because you don't want to look like you are self-promoting. And that's something that I see men doing a little bit more comfortably than women. I also see, and this is, you know, more specific to the law firm model, but I see that a lot of the women I coach are having trouble with equity conversations, both from getting to that equity level as well as compensation around origination sharing. That is something that's really, really hot right now. And it's beholden upon the person in most firms to ask for equity. Like, you know, partners aren't giving away equity most of the time on cases, and they're getting women involved. And a lot of times the women are, you know, shy about asking for that. And they just kind of go about doing their work, even when the client is connecting with them directly and not even involving the relationship partner. So it's really kind of getting the women to start asking for things and start, you know, promoting themselves and advocating for themselves. I think that that's really important. And it's something that is missed on us a lot because we're always, as a gender, kind of waiting for people to appreciate us versus kind of being on the forefront of asking for forgiveness instead of permission.
Right. So what advice would you give to someone where they're, tomorrow they have a meeting and they need to bring this up? And this might be a conflict in terms of causing conflict, not a legal conflict, but it might be a stressful conversation. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
How would you coach that female executive or female attorney to really steer that conversation?
It's all about being prepared for it. So, you know, having some practice around what I actually want to get across. What are those key points that I want to deliver? How might I respond? You know, thinking through the different scenarios and practicing your words. I know it sounds strange, but, you know, having a conversation with a friend or your partner around, like, this is how this might go. Can I just practice on you? Can I do some role playing? It really does help with just making sure that the words that you're saying are authentic to you. So it just kind of flows with the conversation and you're prepared for any kind of comeback that the other person might have. So you're not based in emotion and you can be very factual with how you're delivering your message.
Yeah, that's great advice. What's interesting, I think, especially in the legal environment, is that you do see firms putting women in position of leadership. And I've seen it where they've done it and they actually give them the authority. I made a placement last year. It was a female attorney. She joined a big firm where the Washington managing partner was a female attorney. The U.S. global managing partner was a female attorney. And the firm's global managing partner was a female attorney. But I thought what was interesting,
fantastic,
nobody ever brought that up. But I thought that's unique. And that's something that I would bring up, especially to female candidates that I'm talking to now when I'm working with this firm still. But I thought it really was, it was a really good story, a really good narrative. How do you think organizations can really pick and choose and find the successful female attorneys or leaders that have good leadership skills? What do you think their criteria should be and who's going to get put into that leadership role?
That's an interesting question. I think in your particular case, I think what's really interesting with the story that you just told is it was part of the culture and the fabric of their firm. Right. Yeah. So they weren't doing it just to be on the forefront of their clients' minds of, you know, having this non-gender bias leader. And I think that that's important because they weren't all about the self-promotion side of it or the firm promotion side of
it.
It was just part of the culture. But it really is very important for top down when you're talking about your associate development, because I think law school has just flipped and now there's more women in law school again than is men coming through. So it's interesting that we have all these women that are interested in professional services and legal, but they're not rising to the top all of the time. And I think that it really is, to your question, it's finding those people, and those are different skill sets of what a leader is versus what a good business developer is versus what a manager is versus what a worker bee is, right? And finding those people and really investing in those people. And this is a really big challenge for a lot of law firms and professional service firms because they don't want to play favorites on things. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to play favorites. If there is somebody who is excelling in one area, you need to invest in them. You need to, you know, really show that you are interested in helping their career path. So whether that's giving them a mentor or giving them opportunities to succeed in that particular lane, that's really important. And it's also important to for those other people that you're guiding to find what their lane is. You know, maybe it's not leadership. Maybe it's, you know, they're a great recruiter and they'd be a great hiring partner one day. So it's really finding where is that career development lies and really fostering that for everybody. Right. So it's almost making sure that everybody has a career plan in place.
Yeah.
And really trying to feed and guide them.
Let me ask you this question. What do you think men can do to be better allies? Because I think the day my daughter was born, I had a stake in the future of how the women are treated in the world of work. Yeah. And I found that my perspective changed. And, you know, before, it's absolutely important that it's fair and equitable for women in the workplace. But when my daughter was born, then I really want the world to change. What do you think men can do to be better allies of women in the workplace?
Well, I've heard that story several times. So I think men need to have daughters because that really does kind of change your mindset on things. I think that a lot of times it's more of a talk, and you're talking the talk instead of walking the walk, right? Like, I hear a lot of people saying they're advocates and trying to, you know, bolster women. But one of my friends is really good into like the data analytics and everything. And we were doing a survey with ALM. I don't know if you are familiar with ALM, sure. But we were doing a survey with them about a year and a half ago. And we started talking about the social analytics around everything. So when somebody is putting out there, like, please congratulate my fellow colleague, Sarah, for making partner, right? That's great that they're putting that out there. What are they also doing on their other social media posts? Are they engaging with other women on, you know, like, what does the behavior look like behind the curtain? Is it just promotion for this, you know, this one time? Are they actually walking the walk with other things that they're doing? And social media is a great place that you can kind of dive in and look at that, what their social media preferences are, how they're actually engaging and promoting. And it's really fascinating to kind of dive into that. It's something that I hadn't looked at before, but that's just one case. And that's a very visible case because it's out there. And I don't think people are kind of understanding that. So I'm very conscious of that when I'm, you know, out there promoting on social media. I want to make sure that I am balanced in whatever I'm talking about, because you do kind of leave a footprint of everything that you're putting out there for yourself.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So let me ask you this as we bring things to a close, Jill, if you could give three action steps, what can somebody or a female in a leadership role, what action steps can they take to become more effective in that role?
Yeah. So I think to your point about the allies, I think the first one is finding an advocate and an ally. And that is really important. I think finding what who your circle of influence is, who that network is for you. I think of it as a board of advisors. I actually have a board of advisors for myself. And I think that that's really powerful to be able to have people, men and women, that you can connect with and can be, you know, sounding boards for different things. I call on them, you know, for the last 20 years. They've just been kind of my stable of people that I can go to. So I think that that's first and foremost, the most important thing that you can do is, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people.
That's great.
The second thing I think is really important is owning your narrative, like controlling your narrative, what you want that to be, what you want that to look like. And thinking through, you know, how is my perception out there? And one thing that I always kind of go back to is there was a lawyer that I used to work with at the firm that I was at most recently. And it was about 10 years ago. And he had a black and white picture where he had hair. And he was no longer with hair. It was about 30 years later. And we wanted to change his picture. And he was hell-bent on not doing that. And it's the perception that's out there.
Yeah, right.
So when he went to meet people, I actually had a client that came to me and said that they were shocked when they met him because he looked nothing like his picture. And that's telling, and it erodes trust. You don't think about that, but it really does. So making sure that whatever's out there is reflective of who you are and who you want people to know, what you want people to know about you. So controlling that narrative. And I think the third thing would just be, you know, really kind of thinking about what you want from your career. And one of the things that we start with whenever we start coaching is getting people to think about why they went to law school.
Yeah.
What made you decide you want to be an attorney? Or what made you decide you wanted to be an accountant or a financial advisor? Like, what was it that brought you there? Because a lot of times, they go, you know, my son's in college right now, and he's, you know, going to try to find what he wants to do, and he's going to land in something, and it may not be what he wants to land in. It may be where the job is pushing him. And a lot of times within professional services, especially within legal, you go into a firm and you're kind of put where the need is, right? And that's kind of your path. And you kind of go towards that path thinking that you want to make partner. And you don't take a step back to think about, is this what's making me happy? So a lot of people get to that partnership stage and they're like, I'm not happy. Why am I not happy? Where was the disconnect? It's because you didn't take stock in where you really wanted to be at the start of your career. And check in occasionally to make sure that, am I on the right path? You know, is this still what I want for my life? Because I've seen attorneys that, you know, go to law school, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars at Harvard, you know, get to that stage where they're at an equity level and they're like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. I'm going to go be a baker now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go be an artist, or, you know, they want to tap into a different side of their career or their, you know, passions that they've kind of pushed down for so long because they haven't been authentic to themselves.
Yep. That's all great advice, Jill. And thank you for sharing that. And thanks for being on the show. But before we go, tell us about your company. What are the offerings? What do you have? What do you do that you'd like our listeners to know about? And we'll certainly put any links that you have on the show notes. So for everybody listening here, if you want to connect with Jill, go to the show notes wherever you hear this podcast, and we'll have all her information there.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. So my business is founded in coaching and training, and that's something that we do for both business development, communications, as well as leadership focus. I am right now getting my certification to certify others in the leadership capacity, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Wow, that's great.
The other thing that we are focused on is being an extension of services for marketing and BD departments. We have talent resources that can step in with a moment's notice to help support marketing BD teams. And the third thing that I'm most excited about is we've built our own technology. So we are techpreneurs now, not just entrepreneurs, and we have a technology that we've invested in to be built, and it has two sides. One is really focused on professionals, whether it be attorneys or accountants or financial, that focus on business development efforts. And then the other side is a project management system for marketing BD departments that, you know, is there to kind of quantify the ROI around marketing BD support. So I am really excited about that. And it's all gamified, which is great because everybody loves the fun competition side of things. And I'm just excited to bring that to market as well.
That's great. We'll put that link on the show notes as well, Jill.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Thanks for being back on the show. Great job. I'd love to have you back on the show again in the future, Jill. Thanks for being here.
I love that. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. For more information about our recruiting services for international law firms, visit our website at attorneysearchgroup.com. To inquire about having Scott speak at your next convention, conference, sales meeting, or executive retreat, visit therainmakingpodcast.com.